Blog Talk Radio.
God's country. Yes. We're going to talk about that tonight. You know, this is the first time I've ever just not had a guest, not had something planned out. It's been a long week, and I just haven't kind of worried about it. I thought, it just happens, whatever happens. We're going to talk about God's country. Thank you so much, D-Rock, for that song. D has been gracious enough to let us use his other song that we'll close out on this evening, Keep On Keeping On, is our theme song and our theme, actual theme, for the Free Don Miller Show on Thursdays. And he's a great patriot. He's a hardworking patriot. He's a big, huge shoulder to his sweetheart, Kim Paris. And they both work really hard. And that's one of Dee's newest songs. And it's got some awesome words to it, folks. You find it. Go look up D-Rock on Facebook. You can't miss him. D-Rock Country. Follow it. Buy his album. Listen to it. You can listen on his website to most of his songs. Let me tell you, some powerful, powerful words at a very powerful, powerful time. This is Continue for Truth Radio. We welcome you. You're going to have a great night tonight. I'm going to rant. Maybe some people will call in and we'll rant together. You know, each week, we've got different shows that go on, and there's different purposes behind those shows. tomorrow night we're going to talk about parental sovereignty. You know, today was a great day. Oh, a great day. The domino toppled, folks. You've been following C-Scope. The domino toppled. Starting domino toppled. Texas said with a very loud no today to the C-Scope curriculum. And one of the arguments people use against Common Core is that how do you know what's going to be in the curriculum? They haven't written it yet. Well, yeah, if they can't see that, that's a problem in the first place. But yeah, they're right. You know, there's not a lot about what's actually going to be in the Common Core curriculum. But we can find out real quick by going to Texas, because that's the rough draft. We know what was in the curriculum in Texas. It was dangerous and it was anti-American. It was no good. Normally I'm on this radio saying that Alabama rocks. And Texas rocks too, but Texas rocks huge today. I firmly believe this is the domino that will topple Common Core. Going down fast, folks. I've never seen anything quite like it. You know what? The first time I heard the words Common Core, I heard them from Phyllis Schlafly, who was, if you don't know who she is, you look her up too. She was doing what a lot of us are doing. Tim Brolin and Scott Osborne and Jennifer Montrose and Teresa Breske and Nancy Hayes. We could keep going for days. She was doing it in the 40s, man. She's been doing it all her life, and she's done some great things. And she was the first person I heard her and interviewing Orlean Coley, who's the California president of the Eagle Forum here in California, Phyllis Schlafly. That's her organization. We talked about Common Core, and nobody knew about it. I'd never heard about it. I'd never saw it on Facebook. I'd never seen it on TV. And I don't know how long ago that was. It wasn't very long. And today, C-Scope went down, and it didn't just go down. It went down into burning flames, and it went down with the idea we need to put up a protection in Texas to protect the sovereignty of the parent and the local community in deciding what curriculum is taught in their school. Are there some drawbacks to that? Yeah, there's some drawbacks to that. You know, are there some pluses on having everybody kind of on a basic same curriculum? Oh, yeah. But I'm going to tell you that's the only guarantee we've got to keep from people from the top wanting to preach a certain type of worldview to the students, the children of the parents of this here United States. This is huge, folks. Pass it. Go to my Facebook page, go to somebody else's page, look it up on The Blaze, look it up anywhere. Just type it in there. Pass around their letter that boldly states, no way. Get your curriculum, pack it up, and send it packing. There was mention in that letter of no more investigation into the curriculum. I'm kind of concerned about that. I think their investigation needs to go forward. We'll talk about that at another point. We do that on Tuesdays, Parental Sovereignty, with Jennifer Montrose and Stacey Talbush and Dan McMahon. We talk about what's going on in the states. On Thursdays, for 2 years now, I've been paying attention to and participating in the fight to free a man. A man who has been maliciously, wrongfully convicted of something that I have no better way of explaining it. You know, this is at the point where Ken Brolin would be laughing right now, but I there's certain ways I have to say something, and this is it. If you start with the Duke LaCrosse case, we all know what that is. The woman accused the boys of rape. It never, ever happened. She finally admitted it after she had torn their lives up. Add to that the Duke's the hazard. I'm telling you, you got Lippy and Maddie and Bruni in this. A DA, a judge, and a sheriff. And the only way to describe the insanity and the lack of ethics and the ability to know what's right and wrong is the Dukes of Hazzard. Talk about the Keystone Cops. It's a shame. You have to add to that a really, really interesting case of Perry Mason goes to the red light district, folks. Because this is deeper than Don Miller. Don's been sitting in prison now for 15 years out of a 52-year sentence. Shameful. Maliciously done. The judge knows he's innocent. The DA knows he's innocent. The victim knows he's innocent. The sheriff knows he's innocent. We all know he's innocent. Folks, tune in on Thursdays if you do nothing else and listen to Tammy Silver and I discuss this case. 2 years later, got my start on Blog Talk Radio one night with Stephen Williams and Larry Buckus during the Cain campaign. A week later, we had a show called Conservatives Coast to Coast, and a little while later, a couple of months later, I started listening to the free Don Miller show that they had going on Thursday nights, and I listened, and it became just absolutely insane at how blatant this is. This isn't one of those cases where you're going to get some on the pros and some on the cons, and you got to kind of weigh and look for the truth and look for the lying on both sides and figure out what is truth. This is just blatant. This is insane. It's a made-for-TV miniseries. Thursdays, tune in to the Free Don Miller and Recall Judge Madden show. We are going to have a patriot and a half this Thursday. A patriot and a half. Jim Sigmund of Rage Against the Media is going to meet the Don Miller show. She's been investigating this last week. I sent her the link to an anatomy of a wrongful conviction.com. Karen is going to come on, and we are going to talk about her actions and her efforts with Rage Against the Media, which have been insane. I'm telling you, part of the reason why some of the mainstream media was covering Benghazi before the AP accident, the AP mess, partly was because of what Karen Sigmund was doing on Rage Against the Media. Okay, we're about ready to invade poor little early Wisconsin and Ironwood, Michigan, and the surrounding areas. It's going to be fun, folks. Hey, we've had her on before. We had her on Conservatives Coast to Coast. She was an awesome guest. She does awesome hard work. She knows what she's doing, and she is raging against the media, and she's getting her word out. Learn about going around the media. Around the media. Ladies and gentlemen, tune in on Thursdays. Free Don Miller, Free Don Miller, Free Don Miller. It is so, so important. And then on Fridays, we have ladies' Bible class, and we're having a great time. We just talked about the first nine plagues, and there's so much in that story. A lot of times, you know, in Sunday school, they just go through the plagues, and that's what they are, and Pharaoh, you know, and back and forth. But there's a lot in that story. We filled 2 hours, let me tell you. Had a great time, and this Friday morning, sitting around Betty's table, as we've done for quite a few years now, we're going to sit and discuss the 10th plague in the Israelites leaving Egypt in the book of the Exodus in the Old Testament. All these things come together for a reason. The network's called Contending for Truth for a reason. This show is called Politics and Religion. Do not tell me I can't mix them for a reason. Tomorrow's show is called Parental Sovereignty for a reason. And they all come together. They all hinge in one spot. We're going to start with that spot tonight. This is God's country is where we're starting. Creator. We're going to start with creation. We're going to answer a question that Lisa posed to me at one point a few weeks back, and I answered part of it, but it's one that takes a lot of it's not a hard answer, but it's one that the more you've got, the more little pieces and illustrations that you've got, the more it makes sense, and the easier it is to explain this question. We're going to go to that. We're going to talk to them about taxes. And you're going to be amazed at the way I take and tie those two questions together. What do taxes have to do with the creation? I'll show you. I'll show you about decency and order. We're going to talk about taxes. We're going to talk a little bit more about Freedon Miller. Some things coming up. We're going to have a good time tonight. Each week, I start out with the creation. Are you listening? Can you hear those birds? Like I said before, I stand in, on a piece of property with a bunch of trees on it to start off with, and surrounded by little hills, good-sized hills, oak trees, California oak, black oak, different oaks, pines, rocks. As I look kind of to the northeast, I see the top of the Sierra Nevadas up in the high country. Probably about 20 miles as the crow flies to the top of that peak up there. I see the moon. Right now it's coming up over from the mountains from the east where it comes over every night. The sun comes over that mountain across the street. Below the mountain is a huge meadow, an old little airstrip. Been there forever. A well, and the pasture where the cattle come back and forth and graze during the day, and the wild turkeys lay out in the hundreds, I've never seen anything like it before in my life, but they catch up out there, the wild turkeys, and there's so many you can't count them. And the birds are in the nests right now. We've got all kinds of flowers growing, and geraniums. I love geraniums because you can pick and stick them. You know that? You take a geranium, just break it off, stick it in the ground, and it will grow. Trust me, it will grow. I've never lost one yet. They're viral. Rocks. Oh, the rocks. On the side of the hill, the beautiful formations. The blue sky. The noise. The cat. Yeah, the cat is running between my legs. Creation. I can look at all those things that I just described, and I can see that there has to be an architect. The tree, it reproduces, grows a certain way, follows a certain pattern. The pine tree doesn't decide one year it's going to put out acorns and grow oak trees. It just doesn't do that. It just keeps growing a certain way. The birds do the same thing. And as I look at the intricacy alongside the simpleness in the creation, I see that there is a God. Undeniably. I think about what I'm expected to believe with evolution, which is the world is 25 billion years old. There's not a man around who hasn't been on this earth any less than 115, and we're calculating up in the 25 billions of years, folks. I'm sorry. There's a lot of science we know, and there's a lot of science we don't know, and that is the biggest huge guess based on some really kind of funny, actually, ways of figuring that out. But I look at the creation and I see that there has to be an architect. This doesn't happen by accident, folks. Not everything altogether. You know, the sun's got to be just so far away from us. The moon does its job. It's amazing. The evolution just so happens. We've got a daylight and a nightlight. Just so happens. A daylight and a nightlight. Just so happens that everything on this earth is, it all works together. you know, things that happen on accident over time, mutations and different things, and that's basically what evolution teaches us, that things mutated into what this is. But have you ever seen a mutation, a wart on a tree? There's a wart on that tree over there right across the street from me, the big oak tree. There's a wart. There's different things that in the creation, it doesn't turn out beautiful like this on accident. And to ask me to believe that it all happened just on accident is all stemmed from one little single cell. Well, where did the plants come from and the animals? One single cell? I mean, where did that life spring from in the first place? It does not make any sense. If you follow the train of logic of evolution and what the science that does not believe in God tries to teach you, it doesn't make any sense. There are a zillion holes in it. I'd love to have a debate with one of the finest scientists in the world that believes in evolution. I'd love to. Because I'd just let them spout off all the little facts, and then I'd say, look at that tree across there, and you tell me that happened by accident. And then I'd let them spout, and I'd say, you look at the little hummingbird, and tell me that happened by accident. There is no way, folks. That's just common. That's logical. I'm a logical kind of person. I'm not a person that believes in mythology and mysterious, just all of a sudden things that just because, you know, I don't believe like that. My faith is based on a lot of logic. The Bible tells me to do that. It's the very beginning of Romans. Paul says you can look at the creation and you can see that there is a God. And that's where Paul starts in the book of Romans, chapter 1. I take the eyeballs, and I've mentioned this before. You've got two eyes. They put two pictures in your brain. Your brain puts them together, and you get 3D. And that happened on accident. And it happened on accident, not just in humans, but almost in every other animal there is. And most insects just happened by accident. That whole 3D thing just happened by accident. Depth perception. But we're living in the 21st century where we can go to the moon and all kinds of great things. I mean, I'm broadcasting potentially to anywhere in the world right now over my iPhone. You know? But man isn't very close on 3D movies, is he? 3D television. Oh, it works okay. It's a lot of hassle and it's kind of a strain on your eyes if you watch it after a while. But it's nothing super like the human eye. And then the nose and the mouth, they work together. Your taste buds rely on what you smell to make it taste right. That just happened by accident. Over billions of years, it just slowly but surely worked that way. As man started standing up from an amoeba or a monkey, that it just so happened that taste buds and thinking process. And then the other thing is the difference between human beings and all the other living things on the earth. I love it. A leftist will, in a heartbeat, try and save the whales. But when it comes to a human being, because it has not left the womb of the mother yet, it's free game. Insane. You can't tell the difference between all of the other animals and a human being. And its ability to think and reason, create, and bring us to the point where we've brought ourselves. There's no way. We're using that to answer Lisa's question. We're going to start there, and then we've got a caller that's called in, and we will see who that is. I want to start here because, you know, there's a lot of logic in the Bible, a lot. And a few weeks back, Lisa asked me, you know, I've got somebody I've been trying to talk with, and how do you answer this question? How can someone say they believe in God but not the Bible? How can somebody believe in God but not the Bible. It's a valid question. It is a valid question. Because I just got finished explaining why I believe every human being can look and see that there is a creator. It's blatant. You have to really, really not want to believe. You don't want a God in order to not see that there had to be a creator. Now, who that is, what he wrote, what he gave to man, that takes a little bit further looking. Sorry about that, folks. Technical difficulty. You know, there's different religious books that have been written over man's history for different reasons. We've got people writing books today, different viewpoints on religious matters, on God, faith matters. There's been all kinds of books that were written. And I've looked at a lot of them. I have looked at a lot. But how, when you stand back and look at all of them, what judgment do you make on which one's right? It's a good question. When it all comes down to it, like I said Sunday morning in my Sunday morning class, it's a book. It's pieces of paper. It was produced in a bookshop, and those words were put on there. The physicalness of itself, it came, you know, in my Bible, within the last decade, off of a printer, a printing press, you know, Gutenberg. He made the difference on that. But there's, how do we know? How do we have an idea that book that we call the Bible is inspired? Is there any proof? Is there any way? I know we've got proof. We can go back to the transcripts, the original transcripts, and we can prove that it goes back to a certain time. We can go back and see, you know, as far back as we can on some of the material. Definitely at a point earlier in time when they were written by certain people. We've got a historical account of. Josephus did a great job, a historian at the time of Christ, of copying down some of the histories, and a lot of it matches. But how do we know that the Bible is the inspired Word of God? How do we know that? Part of it's faith. Part of it, you can look at the basics of the product of it. What comes out of it? Is what comes out of it good? God is good? I mean, I think it's blatant if you look at this creation, that God is good. He didn't make it a scary world. Human beings make it scary, but he made it beautiful. Boy, you go anywhere you live. Go into nature. Go away from the houses and the streets and see God's creation. You can look at it and see that it's good. I mean, that's logical. You can go downtown New York City and see that it's not so good. Now, there might be some fun things down there and some great food and different things to see, but the totality of the lifestyle that most people are living in is not so good. We can see that. What is the product? What comes out of it? Is it like the creation? Is it good? Does it make sense? Does it fit together? You know, when I was a little boy, when I was kindergarten, I would imagine, my mom and dad bought a set of World Book encyclopedias. And I remember sitting, we had a sunken living room, I remember sitting on that step, opening up those boxes and with that man and going through those encyclopedias. Jump forward 20 years later, in the 90s, I worked for World Book Encyclopedia, and I was a school library specialist. I went in the schools and talked to the educators, and I taught the students reading and writing and research skills classes, and I worked with the private schools and did lots of different things with World Book Encyclopedia, and I was really, really proud of it because I remembered having great memories as a kid, and I used those. When I sat down with a mom and a dad and we were talking about the encyclopedias, it wasn't just a sales pitch. I'm telling you, I had passion about those things. And one of the things that we explained as I sat down, one of the reasons I loved it is Rule Book Encyclopedia is written geared to the age level of the person reading the article. A good example is in the A volume, the animal article. The beginning of the article starts at a kindergarten level. In language, in vocabulary, in subject matter, and it goes all the way through, and by the time you get to the end of the animal article in World Book Encyclopedia, you're at the college level, and it's dealing with classes and phylums and so on and so forth, and all of the things that you would deal with in college, and it's purposely set up that way. Purposely set up that way. So when you look at all those books together, they're not all haphazard. They all work. They all design that way. Every single article is designed that way and works that way. And of course, except for the one-paragraph, three-paragraph articles, but the big articles are written that way, especially when they relate to what goes on in school. Common Core could just be gone and just put a set of encyclopedias in every classroom. Let them use that for curriculum. They got great articles on the math subjects and everything else. There was another thing. When you go to the Alaska article, you saw a picture of the Alaska earthquake, and the caption below had all the information in it except for the one thing you really wanted to know. And it told you the date, and it did this much damage, kind of explained the picture, told you everything except for how big the earthquake was. How big the earthquake was. So what it did was it pushed you, it encouraged you to get into the article and read and find the information. World Book articles are written out that way. They're planned out that way. Why do I say that? Because we can see the same thing in the Bible. I've been studying that thing since I was a kid. I've been studying those Old Testament stories since I was a kid. And I'm not real good at remembering facts and figures and exactly where this is at, where that's at, but I can stand back and I can frame the Bible for you. And I'm going to tell you, as you stand back, all of those different authors, over thousands of years writing all those different books, and they fit together like a set of World Book Encyclopedia. The plot line is the same all the way through. They match up and work together like an intricate Swiss clock. You don't realize that. The average person does not realize that until they get in and study that thing as a whole. And the Bible itself says, get in and study itself as a whole. Study to show thyself approved unto God. A workman needeth not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. That is exactly why you've heard me say a zillion times on these shows, get that Bible off your coffee table. Get your Bible off your coffee table. Get your Bible off the coffee table. It is not there so when people walk in your door, they see you and think you are a Christian. You are supposed to put it in your head so that it's in your heart so that no matter where you go, they see it clear. And the Bible is a fantastic novel. Guide, handbook, encouragement book, hard hitting. And I'm going to tell you, it all fits together. You can start in Genesis chapter 1 and you can follow a very, very basic pattern that shows the very nature of man, which has not changed. We look at a lot of things. You know, we look at some of our shootings. We look at the issue of gun control. We look at our crime. One thing we know, man has always had the tendency to do things the opposite of the way that the basic principled foundation says to do it. But the Bible, it lays it out clear. The more you read it, the less you read it, you're going to get some great things. I pick it up and read the 23rd Psalm, and it will encourage you, and it will teach you a little bit. Great. Put it on the wall. It makes a great framed picture. Say it from the pulpit. It's very encouraging, especially at the time of a loss of a family member. But that's not what that Bible's for. That Bible is for picking it up, opening it up, and getting to know it. In one of our in a group the other day, a girl made the statement that I just don't know. I don't even remember how she said it. It was pertaining to marriage and staying abstinent until you get there. And she wasn't getting it. The answer to that is very, very basic and very, very simple. It comes down to, you can use the illustration of Christmas presents. Like little kids that only had one Christmas present cherished them. The little kids, they get 100, don't cherish any of them. Little kids that get one Christmas present cherish it throughout the year. They take good care of it. Person that's got many treats it not very well. And that's the reason why, if you follow the plan of you save sex until marriage, you marry that right person, stand on the base simples. You're not unequally yoked, and you save sex for between the two of you. You got a lot less chance of somebody straying, because when you've had it a lot, then you've got a lot to compare it to. Why did I go off on that tangent? Because it's a simple basic, and the Bible teaches it, and the Bible was teaching it thousands of years ago. Man. I'm sure they're doing a study on it somewhere. I'm sure they've done studies on it and spent thousands and millions of dollars trying to come to that conclusion. So when I look at the Bible, there's either two choices. Either that came from God or it didn't. Now, it can't just halfway come from God. Okay, that doesn't make logical sense, right? It either did or it didn't. Now, if it did, you better pay attention to it. You better pay attention to it, because he created you. He created it. He put the man in the handbook. What happens if you don't follow the handbook? When I was in college, I came home from college with my girlfriend, and we went and bought a Yugo to go back and forth to college in, and it was this little, had a Fiat engine in it and a Volkswagen quality body. Well, next morning I got in it and went to go start it up and go pick up Leslie at school, and or to take her to school, and it wouldn't start. Started, and then when I did get it started, it kind of, I've done this from the pulpit, and you can't see me, so it doesn't no sense to do my little dance. But it basically jumped and groaned, and for the first 4 or 5 minutes you were driving, and then all of a sudden it just took off mine. And I did that for for a few days, and couldn't figure it out. We got to Saturday, and you know, Saturday guys get in the brand new car, and they clean it all out, and they mess around with the radio, and they look at the book, and they do all these things. That's just what guys do, right? I was never one too much one, oh, what's underneath that hood, but I did the same thing. I went out there and cleaned it all up and did this, and I'm sure I added a couple of wires somewhere. I'm sure I would have done that. And I got out the handbook, and it said, if you will, to start the car, it's a Fiat engine, you push the gas pedal down once, let it up. Leave your foot off the pedal, start the car, let it idle for 30 seconds, and then drive off. Well, I did. I started the car exactly where the book said, and you're going to be amazed. Backed out of the driveway, down the road, no hassles. Why? Because I followed the owner's manual. See, one of the proofs to me that the Bible is real is the more I study it and the more it makes sense to me, it's very, very logical. The more I learn that my hurdles are designed to make me stronger, and the more I appreciate my weaknesses and the opportunity to make them stronger, and the more I realize that Bible is the best owner's manual there is. There is not a psychiatrist around, a psychologist around, a Dr. Spock and his craziness around. not one. They can get it. As good as that Bible is. When you read it in full. And that doesn't mean you have to cover every single piece. You know, I run through the Bible real quick. It's really, really basically simple. Genesis takes you through about half the Old Testament history in one book. 4,000 years, really. And then, as you go through it, you start the story of Abraham. And you read the story of Abraham, it takes you all the way up to Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther, and that's the end of the history portion of the Bible. It's all in that section. There's a few things in there, the law, in Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, there's some law in there, and there's a little bit of dividing of land in there in different places, but for the most part, from Genesis to Esther is the story. It's the novel. You can read it almost all the way through. There's some things that you'll get into that you probably want to skip the more reference section of the library. You know, you go into the fiction section, you got the reference section, you got the newspaper section. You know, there's different parts of the Bible that are for different purposes. But that first half of the Old Testament is the history. It's the history of Abraham. All you got to do is read all the way through it. Then you come to the poetry and the prophets, and you got to kind of stick that stuff into the history. It's kind of like the appendix. It's got different pieces. It's got little stories that fit in here or there. But for the most part, that stuff all fits in somewhere in the history. For example, in 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings, you learn the story of the kings and David being one of those kings. And so the book of Psalms and Proverbs written by his son, the book of Proverbs by Solomon, those go in there along with those stories about King David and King Solomon. And the different prophets are prophesying to different situations. You know, Daniel is going to Babylon and Nebuchadnezzar, and that fits into the period of the divided kingdom. And it gives us kind of a little extra. And then when you come to the New Testament, you've got the four Gospels and four different ways of telling the story of Christ. You know, great way of doing it. Talk about 3D, that's 4D. And then the book of Acts is the history of the church. You got the book, the first four books, the history of Christ, and then the book of Acts, the history of the church. And then the last of it is appendix. It all goes in there somewhere. These are the letters that were written by the apostles to help deal with the problems, the basic problems that the church was going to deal with because they were already dealing with it, and they haven't changed. That's what's amazing about it. The same problems they were dealing with in the first century church, today's church is dealing with those problems. Every one of them are in there. That hasn't changed. That proves to me that God, that good God that made this creation and made it all logical, that proves to me that he wants that Bible. There is no other religious book out there that does that. Not a one. Not a one, folks. Go look. Go look. Don't rely on me. Don't listen to me. I might be wrong. Go look. There is not one. Fits together perfectly. Come to the book of Revelation, and well, you got a lot of information about the society that the first century church was living in. It all kind of goes together in a basic way, and there's some patterns that go from Genesis all the way to Revelation. If you listen on Friday mornings in ladies' Bible class, water. Water, water, water. Every time you turn around in the Old Testament, you come into water. Water and rocks. Water and rocks. Water and rocks and doors and windows. Water and rocks and doors and windows. Christ would say, I am the rock. Christ would say, I am the living water. I provide the living water. The Word, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. The Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him, all things were created. The rock. The water. The door, the window. I am the door. I am the light. In the beginning, in the creation, the water covered the entire earth, and the Spirit of God went back and forth over it. Pretty soon, the land was there, and pretty soon, man was there, and pretty soon, man messed everything up, and pretty soon, we come to the time of Noah, and what did he do to wash away all the bondage? The world was under. The world was a very evil place with a lot of bad people. What did he do? He washed them all away with water. And you go through further, and you find that water. Listen to the 10, the 9 plagues last week. Go back and listen. Look at the water. Friday, we're going to look at the Passover. We're going to look at the 10th plague. We're going to look at the death of the firstborn, and you're going to see some doors and windows. You're going to leave, and you're going to see some water. You're going to see some water washing away. Washing away Pharaoh's army and Pharaoh. And as you go through the Old Testament, that pattern is there over and over with all these different books that all these different people wrote over different amounts of time, and they all ended up together in one book, canonized a certain way. And when it all fits together, it's like a running clock. You've got a portrait of the church in the Old Testament that is cannot be denied, cannot be missed. And we're not just talking about Isaiah chapter 40 and the prophecies of Christ. We're talking about the pattern that's left in all of the books all together. The pattern that's left. And that pattern proves to me that that Bible comes from God, and if it comes from God, I better be reading it, and I better be finding out what I want to do. But you see, folks, people that don't want to live by a standard have to push the standard away. People that don't want to live by a standard push the standard away. So that's the real answer to the question based on all of these things that I just said. If somebody does not want to put themselves into a standard and say yes and no to certain things they want, they will not do it. Now, maybe people stand up and say, I'm going to say no to certain things I want because of the way I was raised. Well, that's great. You know, some people are raised that you don't eat meat and grow up as kids, and that's just something they want sometimes, but they just don't do because that was the way they were raised. That's great. We learn through different ways on how to control our wants, and that's the basic here, folks. Jumping hurdles in our wants. Man is born, he spends the rest of his life jumping hurdles. It's how he handles those hurdles that make the difference. Simple and basic. Simple and basic. Man wants all the time. And we want things that are good for us. When we want things that are bad for us, sometimes we don't want to jump the hurdle. Sometimes what we want to do is lay down in front of the hurdle and cry instead of jumping the hurdle. But if we don't jump the hurdle, we're not going to get strong. The more we jump, the stronger we get. Basic, folks, basic. And that is the basic message of the Bible, and it is incorporated into every single book. Wants and hurdles. Wants and hurdles. And the person that does not want to spend the time looking in there, and that's fine. You know, the Bible's got different purposes for different situations. God made it multifaceted, and it's awesome because part of it is a very interesting history book. Part of it will help society to be a better society, and that leaves out salvation. Society cannot save man. And see, that's a teaching that the far left teaches. The Bible salting the earth and salting this nation and making it a better place, because there's some basic principles like thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not lie, thou shalt not steal, and then some of the concepts that are in the New Testament. They make for a better society, but that doesn't save you. That's a different section of the Bible, if you might say. Based on that foundation, there is a definite road that leads to a salvation, and that's a discussion for another day. It's important. I'll tell you, follow the water. Follow from the very beginning to the Old Testament and all the way through to the book of Revelation, and follow the water. And if you'll follow that water and you get to the end, you'll have a pretty good idea what that Bible is. The framework of it is not just, there's a lot of big great minds that have sat down and studied Daniel and Revelation and different other books that go together with this and that. Some of the that have sat down and studied the gospel alongside of Josephus. There's some great men and women in this world that have really become scholars on a certain thing. That's not what I'm talking about. I want you to stand back and look at it as a whole. Because, see, if I take the creation and I start over here at the crepe myrtle and I look way down in at the plant cell and I see that DNA, which is in every single living creature, including mold on this earth, a little tiny blueprint, and try and tell me there's no architect. Come on, folks. But I look down and I see the DNA, and I look back a little bit and I see the plant cell, and I look back and I see the leaf, and I look back and I see the plant, and I look back and I see the dirt and the land around the plant. And then I look across and I see the beautiful painting of that mountain across there with millions of those little leaves, different colors. I see a painting. I see a picture, but I can only see that picture if I stand back and look at the whole thing. And that is the part in this great nation our men in the pulpit, our men who are teaching, have missed. Stand back and look at the whole thing. Just like I looked at the whole set of encyclopedias. When you put them all together in a package, they serve a fuller, greater purpose. They're designed to inspire learning. Every page. And it couldn't have happened by that, on accident. It couldn't have, World Book Encyclopedia, they couldn't have just started putting the articles together and just, oh, we noticed that, by the way, that the articles start at the reading level that where they study that in school, and it moves up as they study the subject. Doesn't happen that way, folks. Doesn't happen that way with the creation. Doesn't happen that way with the Word. It is simple. Is it basic? Follow the thread of sacrifice through the Old Testament. You'll learn something. Follow the thread of sacrifice from Genesis all the way to Revelation. You'll start learn something else. Adam and Eve were in the garden. What happened? They made a mistake. A big boo-boo. God. They felt naked. They tried to clothe themselves. Fig leaves and God. Why is that fig leaf important? You know, they always show the picture of they're in the fig leaf. They didn't stay in the fig leaf, folks. God turned around and saw that it was not enough, and he made them clothes out of animal hides. There was a sacrifice, folks. In that very first story, there's a sacrifice, an animal sacrifice. Blood had to be shed to cover their sins. Blood had to be shed. And that pattern goes all the way through, not just in Genesis, not just in Exodus, but Leviticus. Number, we're going to find out that pattern. We're going to look, and we're going to look at one of the main stories this next Friday on Ladies' Bible Class. The story of that 10th plague, the Passover. You go to the book of Hebrews in the New Testament, the last book after all the books Paul wrote, and you will find lots of references to the Passover. Lots. There's a reason for that. Following the thread of sacrifice. Abraham took Isaac up on that mountain to be a sacrifice. Now, there wasn't going to be a human sacrifice that day. God knew it. If you go to the book of Genesis, the book of Galatians in the New Testament, you'll find out that Abraham pretty much knew it too. He had such a strong faith in God, he knew that if he took Abraham, Isaac up on that mountain and sacrificed him, God would provide the life back again. Because he had made a promise, and God and Abraham believed the promise. Sacrifice God provided on that mountain. He provided the ram. He provided an animal for a sacrifice. There's a thread of sacrifice that goes all the way through. There's a thread of bondage that goes all the way through. There is a thread of the pattern of man that goes all the way through. Man does things really good. We find this in the book of Judges laid out big time, over and over and over again. But the pattern is there from Genesis on. You know, man is doing really, really good because he has faith in God and he's doing things right. He's living a good life. He's good to people. He's got forgiveness. He's not judgmental. He's got responsibility. Things are going great. And pretty soon man starts to forget about God. They forget and forget to retain God in their knowledge and start being prideful and thinking they've done all that. And then pretty soon things start to fall apart. Man tends to start at that point, especially in modern-day society, start living a different kind of a lifestyle, starting to a little bit less, and pretty soon he ends up hitting rock bottom. And what does man when he do when he hits rock bottom? He prays to God. Praise God. When he prays to God, God comes and says, all right, turn back to the right direction. Let's fix this. Things generally get better. I've done this pattern in my life. Most everybody that's listening has done this pattern in their lives. Things get good, things get bad. Things are secular. That relates to global warming, by the way. Things are secular. Oh, here comes the wild turkeys. One little wild turkey. I don't know where all the rest of them are, but there's one running down the road, the airport strip. Wild turkeys. See, man follows that pattern, and things go good and things go bad, and it all really, a lot of it has to do with how we handle our hurdles. Some people tend to handle their hurdles by drinking a lot, and it messes things up. It doesn't get over your hurdles. You just kind of close your eyes to your hurdles for a while, but when you open your eyes, your hurdles are still there, and you're still not more practiced at jumping the hurdle. Some people jump their hurdles. Some people let the government take their hurdles away, and that makes them more weak. Sometimes we need help over our hurdles, and that's important too. It's all on who we rely on. So do we want to rely on the government? Or do we want to rely on each other? Should we be helping each other? Yeah. Do we get it right all the time? No. Why the government has to step in sometimes? That's for the failures of Christianity, if not anything else. You see, all these things tie together in the Bible, and they prove to me, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that there is an architect behind the whole thing, all put together from beginning to end. There's an architect. I only know that because I've studied Genesis and Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy and Joshua and Judges and Ruth and 1st and 2nd Samuel and 1st and 2nd Kings and 1st and 2nd Chronicles and Ezra and Nehemiah and Esther, the Old Testament. And I see how that story fits together intricately. One long drama of the story of the family of Abraham leading to Christ, broken up into two parts. From Genesis to Ruth, notice it's bookended by the story of a woman, and the book of Ruth just kind of fits in there. It doesn't continue the timeline. It fits in the timeline. And that's the story of Abraham and his family as they become a great nation based on the four promises in Genesis chapter 12. And then we enter the time when Israel is a nation and they're under kings, and we start with King David's family, and we follow its lineage, of course, that same lineage being that of Abraham on the way to Christ. One lineage, one family story, all the way through the Old Testament. Lots of different authors over many different years, and they all fit together. It fits together like a John Grisham novel. It fits together from beginning to end seamlessly. Does it have a few things that people like to call flaws? Yeah, there's some reasons why different numbers don't match up occasionally. They go to that a lot. But, you know, there's some numerical reasons in there. But I'm going to tell you the things that people could pick on next to the big picture are absolutely infinitesimal. Take a big giant grandfather clock, and you've got a little cat hair stuck in one of the gears. Big deal. And most of those can be answered if you look at the big whole picture, but you've got to look at that big whole picture first. Because if you don't, you won't see it. There's a lot of basics in it. It's not super complicated. The foundational principles, the foundational concepts, the foundational illustrations are all the same. Now, what do you do when the person says, well, I believe in God, but I don't believe in the Bible? Well, you've got to get them first to understand that there are plenty of proofs, just like in the creation, in the Bible, to believe it's from God. But then what's the next step? Well, you got to apply it. You've got to apply it. And either you don't believe it and you don't apply it, and that's great. That is your choice to make. This is a free country. But I'm going to tell you, your life is going to be better off if you do. I guarantee it. It's as simple as that. It'll be better off if you do. Christians live a better, happier life. Now, the media will try and tell you the opposite of that. And there are some things done in the name of Christianity that are not done in the name of the book that do make things more or worse in some people's lives at different times in history and in different organizations. Yes, every time you take what God laid out, that ruler that God laid out, and you want to move the little lines all over the place, you start messing things up. That's been the story since the beginning. I write in the beginning of my Bible, oftentimes, this is the tug of war between God and man, between man doing things God's way and man doing things man's way. And when man starts doing it man's way, they always end up losing. And Satan's always there to make man's way look great. Common core, right? Common core. We know what the damages are of it. We know what the dangers are of it. And they have to lie. They have to leave things out. They have to, oh my goodness, a cat. Scared me. Ladies and gentlemen, we have in front of us an owner's manual that will help make your life better. But you have to follow it. You can't follow the guy down the street. You have to look for yourself. Now, that's not to say there's not a place for men in the pulpit and people that you can call and ask advice from. There's reasons for that. There's great reasons for that. But you better go check it out. You better go check it out and learn it for yourself. Because in the very first story, in that very, very first story, we've got God telling Eve to do it one way, and we got the guy in the tree saying, oh, no, it's not really that way. And Eve listened to the wrong person. There is only one way you can get it right, and that's listen to the source. There's only one way, and that's to listen to the source. My grandmother taught me a good portion of my, especially my Old Testament history and Bible, and she never failed over and over and over again to say, don't take my word for it, you make sure yourself. How many times do you hear that in your pulpits, folks? Or do you hear, well, I heard this, what's your advice? Oh, don't listen to that person. Don't go and listen for yourself. Don't go read for yourself. I'll explain it to you. No. Go look for yourself, folks. What do you do when somebody says, I believe in the Bible, I believe in God, but I don't believe in the Bible? It's hard, but they're going to have to start looking. But if they look at that creation long enough and see that there is some beautiful perfection in it, you got to decide whether that creator wants something. I mean, obviously, he's bigger than me, you know? It's worth a look. And if you don't want to live by standards, if you don't want to take the Bible and what God says about his creation and what God says about man and try and mold into that common sense way of thinking, that's okay. It's all right. But I would say that it would be really, really a good idea to at least investigate. Because if there is a God, and if that Bible is inspired as it says it is, and it says it is, I mean, it either is lying or it's not lying. But if it's not lying, it says it's inspired. Then you might want to look into it. And if you're a Christian, if you're already a Christian, you might get it off the coffee table. I don't want to stand in front of the God Almighty at the end, whatever the end is, and have him ask, well, what about this? And I go, I don't know. No, I don't know. And he goes, well, didn't you read it? You only had 5 copies in your house, one on your phone, and access on the internet to every language you can imagine. You didn't read that part? The Bible is very clear, and like I said earlier, we're not going to talk about salvation too much at this point. That's something I believe is better discussed one-on-one. Folks, can't find it if you don't get in there and open it up and read it. And read it in its entirety. Don't pull out this scripture and that scripture out of context. Read it in its entirety. You know, the letters that Paul wrote, Romans and 1st and 2nd Corinthians and Galatians and so on and so forth, those were reading other people's mail. We're reading letters that were written to the churches in the first century for one reason or another. They had something they were fighting over. Some, you know, in Corinth, they had a guy sleeping with his mother. Oh, yeah, leave it to the first century church to have problems, big problems already. Life hasn't changed. History repeats itself. And it was there were letters that were written to explain how to fix these problems. And the answers are simple. But you can't find them if you don't read it, folks. Now, I promised you I would take that and tie it in to taxes. Tied in to taxes. Because you see, my Bible is like a couple of thousand pages. And people say that's difficult. They say that's difficult. But you know what? It's not super, super difficult when you consider that the tax code is 80,000 pages and non-transparent. Oh, you see, because this is politics and religion. This is the intersection of where what I believe about the basics of life, God, creation, Christianity, parenting, parental sovereignty, state sovereignty, the greatness of this nation, what it means to be a patriot. Those things, they all fit together. I believe certain things on taxes. I believe that the more difficult you make it, the purpose behind it is non-transparency. You see, God's done that. Man's done that with God's word and God's commandments since the beginning of time. He wants to make things more complicated than it is, and it doesn't have to be. You know, that 80,000 page tax code, you know how many of my Bibles I'd have to stick on top of each other to make that? And that lack of transparency lets our government tweak and change and add taxes and raise taxes in all different kinds of ways. Taxes, folks. It goes right to the basics. The only way we're going to solve our country's financial ills is to get rid of that tax code. Start all over. Make something very simple. And at this point, I don't care too much what it is. I do like 999. I like Jack Kemp's 10-10-10. I see different positives and negatives to the flat tax and the fair tax. I like Ben Carson's 10% is good enough for God, it's good enough for man. I like that. I'm not too concerned about the solution as long as it starts with eliminate that 80,000-page non-transparent tax code that is designed to tweak around and mess as a passive aggressive tax. There are other things that are involved in some of these basic concepts that I believe in. You know, I look at the way that the church in the first century in the book of Acts, the way it's laid out, it's basic multi-level marketing, folks. You think Amway created that? Amway didn't create that. God created that. You know, on the day of Pentecost in the second chapter of Acts, the 12 apostles were gathered together and they spoke for the first time in Jerusalem and they spoke Christianity and laid it all out and to many people that had gathered there, and they all went back to their homes and they taught them to go out and teach and to go out and teach, and they taught them to go out and teach, and they and to how to go out and teach, and it was multi-level marketing. Simple. It's just as simple as that, folks. So many people listened to the apostles on the day of Pentecost, and they went back to Galatia, or they went back to Turkey or Egypt or different places all over. And the book of Acts right there in the beginning in chapter 2 or chapter 1 will explain where all those people came from. And they went and they started little groups. They started little groups, and it spread like wildfire. And it had difficulties the first few years. In 70 AD, the temple was destroyed in Jerusalem. That helped open the way. There was that solved some problems, and the church grew and it thrived. And it's 2,000 years later, it's still in many different forms, growing and thriving, many ways totally contrary to the way the Bible says. But if you go to the book of Revelation, you find out that God says, at some point, folks, I'll remove the candlestick from you. Find the candlestick in the tabernacle and in the temple in the Old Testament. God says, you know, there's a certain point when you guys don't do things my way. Forget it. You might as well, you're doing it in vain. He does the same thing for the individual. He tells the individual, if you don't learn to forgive, I'm not forgiving you. There's a lot of things you can do as a Christian that you get grace from. Not being able to forgive people isn't one of them, folks. Very clear. You know, you look at Abraham and David, two of the main characters in the Bible, in the Old Testament. Not only were they main characters, they are characters that God particularly loved. Abraham and David. David, God said, he's a man after my own heart. Abraham, he says, he's the guy with the faith. He's the one, the illustrator of the faith. When you want to know what faith is, you look at Abraham. God said that. God says that in the Bible. Those two things, those two men, those things. But I'm going to tell you, David, King David, from the beginning to the end, dealt with sexual sin from the very beginning to the very end. He had wife problems. He had all kinds of mistakes in his personal life. He even lost a son. He was a murderer. He looked upon Bathsheba down there, and he says, oh, I want that, and I took it. Even though he had access to everything he wanted, he took some other guy's wife. Got her pregnant, and then when he couldn't con him, he con her husband into sleeping with her, so it didn't look like he did it, he had him killed. He was a murderer, and God said, he's a man after my own heart. God's all about grace, folks. And I'll tell you where his grace stops, and the Bible teaches this very clearly. When you can't get past judging and forgiving, if you cannot forgive, there is not a lot of hope. You better learn how to do it. The Bible is clear and plain on that. Boy, that's not politically correct, is it, Scott? That'd probably get me kicked out of a bunch of church pulpits to say that. Come on, read it. Don't take my word for it. Get in there and look. It's in there. Christ said it. Peter said it. Paul said it. They all said it. The Old Testament says it. That's always been a basic premise of God. If you want me to forgive you and you don't want to forgive the guy next to you, that's insanity. But boy, we'll have a whole congregation of people that cannot forgive. I've seen people sitting on one side of the building that hadn't spoke to people on the other side of the building for 20 years. I don't want to meet my maker that way. That's for sure, folks. You see, it all fits together. It all comes together. Taxes. Keep it simple. You know, God said, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. Christ said that. Taxes are important. I believe there's a spot for taxes to help. God says that. That's one of his sayings. And we find taxes in the Old Testament. That's what a tithe is. You know, in the Old Testament, see, that law was written, was designed not only as a religious law, but as a national law, a secular law, and also a health law. Because they were going to be a nation. We as Christians are a spiritual nation today. We you know, we don't have land, and we don't, although we do have had this country for many years. In many ways, but we don't have land. We're not a Christian nation. It's a spiritual thing. The taxes are important. But you know, the other things are important too. God discusses lie. How does that apply? Well, on our individual level, you know, if you go running around lying about everything, nobody ever believes you. I mean, if you want to make your life better, if you want to make yourself the kind of person that people just believe you, just tell the truth. Today, Millie did it. She was sitting there starting to argue with me about something she did, and I said, Millie, just tell me you blew it. I blew it, Uncle. Okay, now go back to doing what you're doing. Instead of lying about it, instead of trying to tell me you didn't do what you did, that I sat and watched you do. We want to lie. It's our intention to lie. Man's been that way since the beginning. Our politicians want to lie. And 10-10 to 999 was designed to pull out that ability to lie about the tax code, the fair tax, the flat tax. They all, in a way, are inclined to bring out the lying ability. A lying ability. Our tax code. I also said I'm going to talk about some candidates. And there's a couple of candidates that I'm going to spend a lot of time doing what I can over the next year and 4 months. And I've looked at some candidates over the past, and there's some other ones out there that I really, really like. I like Greg Abbott. You know, if Michael B. is got confidence in Greg Abbott in Texas, you believe me, he's going to have my support. Need to look at him a little bit further for myself so I can talk about him and share the information. Coming to Texas here, hopefully soon, makes that very important too. I was very much behind Ted Cruz. I just saw today that Mia Love is jumping back into the race. But I got an old candidate and a new candidate. I got a candidate that I've known already. From last year that we helped run, Gabby Saucedo. And I'm going to tell you, she is one great lady. She's got faith. She's got a background that's incredible. She understands. She's lived it, folks. She's lived it. And she understands some basic things. All you have to do is read my Facebook post to see exactly how I feel about her and her stance on taxes. I know that she knows this is a big item issue. But I also know some other basic things about her. I know that she lives by standards. That she's going to run her campaign by standards. I'm going to tell you, she is out after it to run this campaign right and good. She wants to go to Washington. She wants to go to, I believe, the State House, Connecticut. I'm just gotten back. You know, there were so many candidates over the last couple of years from so many places, and just brainwashed me where even what state. But I know where she stands, and I've talked to her. I've talked to her on the phone. We've interviewed her on the show. We've talked about how she believes on basic principles and basic message and the important things. I know where she stands. I know where she stands on understanding that tax code is gotta go. Where it stands. And I got to help her some in the last election, and she's ready to run again. She's got my support. Got my full support because I know who she is. I got confidence in her. And a new candidate, a candidate that I didn't know before, near the last few weeks, Melissa Bohannon, if she's got confidence in this guy, that's all I need to start off with. If I know where Melissa stands, I know where her values are. I've spent a lot of time working on some projects with Melissa Bohannon, and I know her. I know her well. And I know where her values are. I know what her standards are. I know where she puts the ruler down. I know where her faith stands. And if she's got confidence to the effect that she portrayed to me of Joe Carr in Tennessee, that was all he needed to get my support. Now, obviously, after that point, I investigated him myself, and I saw a man that could slap down Al Sharpton. I mean, slap him down using state sovereignty to discuss the issue of guns, which is the only way you're going to win that argument. The only way. There is no other way. You cannot have the discussion around the fringe and win the argument on that. You have to go back to basic state sovereignty to win that discussion, and he wiped the floor with Al Sharpton. And I'm in a group with some 40 people that he's already gathered together for his grassroots and people that are going to be willing to just give him some time to help him out. And the first question he posed to all of us, the very first question was on taxes. The very first question was on taxes. I've listened to him on the radio, read what he's written. Joe Carr in Tennessee got my support. 100% got my support. I'm going to do everything I can to help those two candidates. And I imagine over the next year and 4 months, some others, definitely. But these are two biggies. They get A's. 100%. Very happy with what I see. And we're going to move forward with that. Because, you see, I believe in this Christian nation. I believe this is God's country, and I believe that one of the ways that they manipulate the spreading of the gospel of Christ, spreading the word of God, is through the tax code. I am sure during all the middle of this scandal, the IRS has been poking at the churches too. And until you get rid of that tax code, the threat on modern-day Christianity, free Christianity in this nation, is at stake from those who don't believe in God. And it's okay if you don't believe in God. That part doesn't bother me. It's when they want to make sure nobody else believes in God. They want it removed from public discord. They think it's they want to take away people's rights to believe that. That's where it gets dangerous. That's where this whole last few weeks of scandal gets dangerous. And I know the moment you remove that tax code, you shift the power over, hugely shift that power over back to the people. It's important, folks. It's important. Our sovereignty is at stake. That's what we're going to talk about tomorrow night. Our state sovereignty. Our national sovereignty. They're trying to hand that away. They're trying to hand that away. They're trying to hand our state sovereignty away. They're trying to hand our local school board sovereignty away. They're trying to hand our parental sovereignty away. They're trying to hand our individual sovereignty. You know, nobody ever talks about this. Why that YouTube video is in the middle of the Benghazi? Why the video itself? How did that particular video get chosen? How did it get chosen? I can tell you exactly why it got chosen that way, folks. I can tell you exactly why. It was picked. And it was picked with the purpose so that they could take that man, give him a perp walk with a bunch of cops with cameras in his face, and put the message out, if you make a video, free speech or not, you're going to be arrested. That was the purpose of the video. They could have picked anything in the world to deflect onto. They picked that for that reason and that reason only, folks. Nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to talk about it. The IRS is abusing things right and left. History bears that out. We can find stories where the IRS abused the Old Testament characters. You can find where big government took from all the people. And where government overstepped its bounds and created a bondage. I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican, folks. I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican because I believe in the sanctity of life. I believe and the founding fathers and their basic principles. I believe those are important, correct principles. I believe that big government creates bondage, and I believe little localized government creates freedom. I believe that entrepreneurship creates power, and the more you've got, the better standard of living that you've got. And the more government controls it, the more a mess you make of it, the more waste, fraud, and abuse. The larger the organization, the structure, the more waste, fraud, and abuse. The smaller the structure, the less. I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican because Frederick Douglass, when he was a young boy, was told by his master, education will ruin any good slave. In the power of positive thinking, Frederick Douglass didn't listen to the negative side of this. He pulled the positive out of it, and he said, oh, so if I get educated, I'll get myself off of this plantation. Basic, simple, common core, isn't it? Common core is dumbing down. We've proven that. Today, Texas said no, because they saw that it was dumbing down. They saw what the curriculum is. We don't have a curriculum out for Common Core. There's not a lot out there. We got some testing and stuff. But we know what was in Texas. Purposely dumbing down, purposely giving a non-God-based point of view. Not just leaving God out, but basing it on that there is no God. Folks, it all fits together. That's why this is politics and religion. Don't tell me I can't mix them. Because my entire life, my politics and religion have been mixed. And it's not because I believe in some spooky man in the sky. Oh, that's the way the world would like to play it. They do that to make me stay politically correct. I wouldn't dare talk about that spooky man in the sky that I talk to. No. It's a creator, and it's very blatant and easy to see that man can't quite understand it, that's for sure, but that there's definitely one there. I hear the birds singing. Little birds singing. Pretty noises. Pretty view. The colors, they all fit together. The light. How do you divide the light into the colors of the rainbow? With water. Light. The moon. All fits together, folks. It all fits together. And the older I get, the more I see that it fits together. Gun control. It all fits together. I can explain very, very simply through the story of the Tower of Babel that the big city is where the sin is, and it's also where the Democratic vote is if you look on the map with the red and the blue little dots on it. Go to New York, Chicago, Illinois, Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles. You look at the high concentration centers, and you'll find out that's where most of the Democrats are. It's also where most of the sin is. It is where most of the disrespect to God is. And it is where the most problems in life are. It's all there. All you got to do is go downtown of any place and find the prostitution and the unhappiness and the drug use and the unhappiness and the lack of contentment. You go out into the countryside where you find more people that have a belief in the creation around them and a basic standards that they live by, and you find them that they're happier people. They're content. The Apostle Paul says, I've learned to be content in whatever the circumstances. And he was shipwrecked 3 times. He was beaten with the 40 lashes minus one. He was in prison. Remember in Acts chapter 16, he's sitting there with Silas in prison. And they're singing, if the skies above you are gray, you will feel so blue. If your cares and burdens seem great all the whole day through. Oh, yeah, no, I know they weren't singing that particular song, but that's the song I hear when I read that story, because that's the attitude that was in those people's hearts. Paul and Silas sitting in that awful, run-down prison with the moist dirt floors and the rats and the cold and the whatever came along with it and the mistreatment, and they were singing because they learned to be content in whatever the circumstances, because they knew a better way that lived a happier life. You go to the big city, you find more of that. You go out into the surrounding areas, and you find that concept in the Tower of Babel. That's what God's telling the people in the Tower of Babel. Don't get together and get so prideful and rely on one big megapolis where we find out that already Nimrod and the Babylonian Empire were doing what? We know what they were doing. Encouraging more and more dependence on the government. Read the stories, folks, and that's not in the Bible. You go to secular history to find that. Nimrod and the Babylonian empires, it was growing. That was the concept, and they had a specific goal to remove God from the discourse. By the time we come to the time of the Tower of Babel, things are getting bad again after they'd gotten so bad at the time of the flood. So when we come to gun control, we know that New York City's got to handle weapons differently than you handle them in Montana. There are just that's just because you've got more problems in a big metropolis. You've got more crime. You've got more stuff. But if folks would get the word sovereignty back into their brain, thank you, Phyllis Schlafly, for bringing that back a long, long time ago, and she organized the three groups of conservatives, the sovereignty conservatives, the fiscal conservatives, and the social conservatives. She put them all together, and it was powerful. When we get back on to understanding what sovereignty is, it's so important. We've got to protect our sovereignty on the individual level. We've got to protect our sovereignty on the community level. We've got to protect our sovereignty on the state level. Because there is no reason for Montana to be having to deal with a fight for the Second Amendment rights of the Constitution. Let New York City have that argument. And if they cross the lines, then New York State can tamp them down. And if New York State refuses to tamp them down, Oklahoma and Kansas and Texas and Montana don't have to deal with it. Capitalism will deal with it. Because what's going to happen? We know, because California's got the Brady Bill. Most structure in the country, we are the number one country, or the number one state in the country for the hardest gun control legislation there is, and we've got the worst record on gun violence. So we know which direction it takes you. And what's happening with the capitalistic system of the state of California, we're moving out. We're leaving. Getting out of here. Getting out of Dodge. We're using we're walking with our wallets. We're not going to spend our money. We're not going to buy our property here anymore. We're not going to buy our groceries here anymore. We're not going to buy our gas here anymore. We're going to go buy it in Texas. California, if it wants to instill Common Core, go ahead. We're going to Texas. We don't have to worry about it. That's capitalism. Send it to the states. The only way that works, though, is if you send it to the states. You know, I had this discussion with one of my good friends that I love, John Grooms, and he says, but Scott, they're going to make you discuss some of these articles. You can't always send it back to the states. And I'm telling you, that's the only way you can win the argument in the first place is to send it back to the states. States have to win this. That's why we're in the United States of America. Because our founders knew if we stayed in individual states, we would keep checkmate on the federal government. The more we hand up to that federal government, folks, the more we're going to get in trouble. And I guarantee you that federal government's trying as much as they can to hand it up to the UN. That's not what the UN was designed for. They're handing it up. They want sovereignty. They want to hand away the sovereignty. We've got to learn what the word sovereignty is, folks. Taxes, get rid of that tax code, it hands us back our sovereignty. It hands us back control. The IRS cannot snoop on our reporters. The IRS cannot snoop on our nonprofit groups. The IRS cannot snoop on our churches. This IRS cannot snoop on the individual and persecute all of those different groups. If you take away that 80,000-page tax code, it just keeps going in circles, doesn't it, folks? Just keeps going in circles. There is a creator. There is a creator. I've been studying that Bible and I'm by no means a scholar. I don't say that to say that. I there's a lot of things that I don't remember, forgotten, and I'm by no means a scholar. I can't take it every detail, but boy, I can tell you the story, and I can tell you the way it's all put together. It's like if I took the car apart and put it back together, I'd understand how it works. I'd not be able to remember exactly the size of every screw or the name of every part. But I'd tell you how it works. I know how it's put together. However, if I study up for 4 weeks on the radio, that's not going to help me out in understanding how the car works. Art. Got to look at the whole thing. Got to look at the whole thing on everything. That's one of the basics that the Bible teaches, is stand back and look at the big picture. Stand back at everything and look at the big picture. Are you having problems raising your kid? Stand back and look at the big picture. Look at what they're doing and what you're doing. I guarantee you, folks, a lot of the time it's what you're doing. Well, I have to keep mine in check with myself and check with my three nieces all the time. I'm always, it's just so tempting when you love them so much to not be consistent. And nobody, I've taught consistency. I've taught consistency for 20 years. I've taught consistency. That still doesn't make it not difficult when you love them so much and you know that you got to ground them for something and you want to let them out and you can and you do sometimes and then you do it twice and you do it three and then you start to lose control and you got to stand back and look and go, okay, or am I having enough patience? There's lots of reasons. Stand back and look at the big picture. In the pulpit when I discuss this, I've got a picture of my youngest niece when she was about a year and almost a year and a half old. And I took and I cut a piece out of this picture, copy and paste, and made a separate picture. And the picture is of the refrigerator. And I took a picture of, it's like got a little Tupperware with a lid and then a can of condensed milk or something, and that's the picture. And I flash that up on the board and say, what do you see here? And excuse me. Some people say, I see lunch or dinner or I see food or, oh, yeah, what do they put that canned milk in my coffee? And then I show the whole picture, and it's Sirena crawling into the refrigerator, and she is all the way in there, butt sticking out. It's the funniest picture ever. And when you go back, you see the whole picture. It changes everything, doesn't it? We find out that picture has nothing to do with that food. Nothing to do with that food, but that food is part of it. That food is part of it. And that's the way the Bible is. There are certain things in there that are in there for a reason, but if you look at them close and don't look at the big, full, broad picture, they don't mean anything. What about faith? Faith is so important, isn't it, folks? Even Satan's got faith. Even the demons believe, and they shudder. What James says. That kind of changes faith, doesn't it? Got to be something a little bit more than that. Faith, obviously. Oh, but that's what the modern preacher on television, the television evangelist, tell you, come up to the screen and touch the screen and pray and then call me in and give me your credit card number. That is insanity. You're never going to hear me asking, no matter how religious this gets, to give you the credit card number. Talking about more important matters than that. Faith. Takes a little more than faith, folks. Show me your faith alone, and I'll show you a faith that's dead, is what Paul said. Got to stand back and look at the whole picture. You got to look at everything. Read through that book of Acts. You want to find out what the first century church, what Christianity was like the first 30, 40, 50 years, read the book of Acts. It's real simple. You're not going to find that in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. The church has not been established yet. Christ dies. Buried, 3 days later he rises again. He walks on this earth for 40 years, or I'm sorry, 40 days, and then he ascends up to heaven 10 days later in the upper room in Jerusalem. We find the men gathering together, picking another apostle, and then they go down to the temple, and Peter preaches the first sermon in the second chapter of Acts. And you start from there and read all the way through, and you find how the church originated. It's the history of the early church. Amazing. In the Old Testament, there's history, and in the New Testament, there's a history. In the Old Testament, there's a reference section. In the New Testament, there's a reference section. It just so happened to be that way on accident after all those men over thousands of years put that thing together. No. One author, folks. There is proof in the Bible of one authorship. Proof within the text when you put the whole thing together. Simple, folks. It's simple. And if we want to save this great nation, if we want to save it, we're going to have to get back to reading a little bit. You see, I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican and I'm a Moses Christian. Paul was a Moses Christian. Peter was a Moses Christian. If you don't believe me, go to Hebrews and read the book of Hebrews, and you'll see what I'm saying. It'll make sense. Just like K. Carl and the Frederick Douglass Republicans lays down and goes back to the basics, goes back to the concept of education, goes back to a pattern, a set pattern to understand why we're Republicans, we're conservatives, and we believe what we believe. I can take and I go back, and the reason I believe what I believe about God is because of the Old Testament. You can't learn about God in the New Testament. There is nothing in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John about God. It's all about Christ. You do not see the personality of Yahweh in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You see the personality of Christ, and in Acts you see the person, and the rest of the books you see the personality of the church. The Old Testament words you find the personality of God, the God that was willing to take a man named Uzzah. You know, the Ark of the Covenant had been gone. It then out of Jerusalem, and David was supposed to be carrying that ark on the poles. If you go into Exodus and read where God laid out the commandments for the pieces of the tabernacle, a lot of them had rings on them, and you put poles to them, and you carried them that way, and that was the commandment of God. He said carry it that way. Well, David went down and went down to Walmart, and he got a trailer, and he hooked it up to a couple of oxen. And they started pulling the ark. It was supposed to be carried on poles. And the ark stumbled. The ox stumbled, the cart tipped, and the Ark of the Covenant started to fall. And a little innocent Uzzah reached up and he touched the ark, and God struck him dead. Well, that wasn't very politically correct of God. And number one, they didn't say anything about Uzzah losing his soul at that point. God used him as an illustration, and he got probably straight to heaven and went, wow, that was a pretty good idea. We sit here back here on Earth, you're looking at the illustration, and we see something different. Something different. You see, God told him to do it a certain way, and sometimes God's just very serious about that. Sometimes he's long-suffering. Oh, there are times in the Old Testament when we're looking especially at the children of Israel during the time of the kings and the divided kingdom when, boy, God had long-suffering and patience. And there were times when men of God begged for God to have patience on the people, and he did. In Nehemiah, you know, Nehemiah was bringing the worship back to the way God wanted it, and he prayed to God. He says, God, we blew it. He says, I tried and tried and tried. We're almost there, but we didn't get it right. And God says, it's all right, Nehemiah. It's all right. You did your best and you got it close. Get it the rest of the way, but it's acceptable to me because you gave everything you could to try and make it the way I wanted it. We don't have that attitude in this country right now. Our Christianity is the way, my way, like Frank Sinatra, my way Christianity. However I want to do it. And what I do is I take my set of beliefs and I go around and I look at all the different churches and I pick the one that matches what I want instead of looking at that Bible, seeing what God wants, and then picking where you go from there. And that's just common sense, folks. I know that formula doesn't make money when you use the church as a business. Oh, I'm sorry. But that's the one that makes it work. I know. I know. I know that to be true. Look at that Bible. We're going around in circles, aren't we? We're going around in circles. That's why this is politics and religion. It goes right back to the basics. You look at the personality of God, and you see the personality that, in many ways, that a father is supposed to have. And then when you get to the New Testament, God is pictured as Christ is pictured as the church, and man is, and the church is pictured as the bride of Christ. And we see the picture of the family and adopted sons of God, and we see the picture of God back in again with the Father. The Father is supposed to be very loving, but very firm and very consistent. And the more he is in the family, the stronger he's going to make it. The stronger he's going to make it. It goes around in circles, folks. Goes around in circles. You know another part of the Bible, and we're going to take a shift here. We're going to go in a different direction. I'm loving this. I get to talk to you two solid hours on Blog Talk Radio. Hopefully it's the last time, too, because wearing me out. This was important, too. One of the other things that proves to me that that Bible is what it says it is when I look at the character lessons that are in it, they're pretty sharp. There are things in there that teach you good character, how to treat your fellow man. You see, go back to Genesis. Genesis chapter 1, the creator, the creation. Genesis chapter 2 and 3, God's relationship with the creator. I mean, man's relationship with the creator, the creator's relationship with man. The next story, Cain and Abel, man's relationship with man. By the time you get to the story of Noah, you've got a story about God's salvation of man. He is going to save Noah and his family in the ark that has one window and one door. In the New Testament, he's going to save his church. A tent not made with hands, as the book of Hebrews says. With one window, one source of light, the Word of God, Christ, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word with God, the Word was God, he was with God in the beginning. That's our light, source. And the door, he says, I am the door. There's only one way to get in there, through me. Through the Word. Not the guy down the street who's giving you his version. Through the Word. Because of all of that, we know there's the character thing is all mixed into that. Just treat people good. That's part of Christianity. Treat people nice. Don't lie. Don't steal. You see, on Thursdays, Freedon Miller. We talk about character a lot because we got three characters who don't have any character. So many times you'll hear me on Thursdays telling D.A. Lipsky, when you go to church Sunday, you need to go forward because you've been lying about this all these years. You have been letting a man sit in prison when you know he's innocent. You need to go forward, son. You've got a mom and a dad who missed their son now for 15 years, lost their grandson to suicide because he hoped to bring national recognition to his dad's story so the whole country could see his dad was innocent. You got a sheriff that's stealing money, that's taking money, $40,000 from the community, and then when he gets caught, he goes, oh, I didn't know it was against the law. A sheriff who every day deals with people who say, I didn't know it was against the law, and he has to say, it's okay, you're arrested anyways, and he uses that same line. That is bad character, folks. That is where religion and politics and Freedon Miller meet up, is at the creation. God, truth, honesty. Creation, the Bible, taxes, elections, and Free Don Miller, and we all got them all into the same conversation, and it's all the same conversation in it, folks. This is all the same lesson. This is all the same sermon. This is all the same rant. It's all one basic concept. Thursday night, we're going to talk about the Daily Glob in Hurley, Wisconsin, Ironwood, Michigan, that doesn't report the news because, one man, Lipsky, the DA, his father-in-law, and boy, this gets really complicated. There's a lot of story, and this would take me the next hour to explain all it. You have to tune in on the show and listen to about it. His father-in-law owns rest homes and advertises a lot in the paper. And there's voter fraud that's involved in that. They've got the old people. There's old people abuse going on in Hurley, Wisconsin by D.A. Lipsky's father-in-law. They are blatantly, obviously getting investigated, news media. You won't, will you? Getting ballots signed in rest homes, taking advantage of little old ladies and little old men. All goes back to the Creator, the creation, and that Bible that I believe, and the characters in that. You know, folks, I've made some dumb mistakes in my life. Boy, have I made some dumb mistakes in my life. Over the years, oh my goodness, from when I was a little kid until I was old. You know, today the baby got a hold of Stacy had some tanning lotion stuff, but it's in a spray can. It's in a spray can. Millie went to the water slide today with her school for end of year stuff, and somehow the uncle left the spray can sitting where the baby could get to it, dumb uncle. And all of a sudden, she went into a room, and I noticed her door was shut. Parents, you know what that means. And I went in there, and sure enough, she had it. And, you know, I had to be really patient with her because when I was Sedena's age, I was still doing the same thing. I was taking the bleach, and I was taking the ammonia. Oh, my goodness, I could have killed myself. The vinegar and the soda. I was that curious kid that got into everything. I had in Livermore, when actually, when we were up there, I was in the fifth grade, I had a little shelving unit turned around backwards in my closet and out towards the back so I could crawl behind there, and I had little green 7-Up glass bottles full of all kinds of concoctions. So I had to have patience with her. She, you see, is curious. Curious. And she was hiding in her room. She was hiding it. It's what we do. What happens on Thursdays on Free Don Miller? The story of some men that are hiding some things. They don't want anybody to know. They don't want anybody to know. But you see, folks, there's good news. There's a lot of people really, really finding out a whole lot. And I would encourage you, if you haven't heard this story yet, go to an anatomyofawrongfulconviction.com. And look it up. You'll find the links to all the radio shows, both Tammy and I's radio show now on Thursdays at 5 o'clock Pacific time, 7 o'clock Central time, and 8 o'clock Eastern time. Or go back to the Underground Hard Drive episodes where it was Steve and Bob were doing the show. They've moved up to News Stalker at between 7 o'clock Pacific time every week, doing a great job on that show. And so Sammy and I took over, but for 2 years we all did it on there, Bob and Steve, and I joined them each week. You can go back and you can listen to the story. You can look at the archives. You can look at the court documents. You can look at the interviews. It's all blatantly there. And if you happen to be a news media person, do a story. Give us a link. Folks, it's spreading. It's spreading. Free Don Miller. Free Don Miller. Free Don Miller. Folks, I hope I did you good tonight. I hope I did you good. We live in hard times. the last couple of weeks, I look at what's going on, and I really think that maybe we're pushing back for a while. And the nature of the pattern of man is that he's always going to try and go Satan's way. We all do that on an individual basis. We all do stupid things. Sometimes we just say, forget it, I'm going to do it however I want to do it. King David was the king of that. I mean, he was a man after God's own heart, but he had sexual problems and wife problems all the way through until he was an old man. This is Contending for Truth Radio. We are going to keep on keeping on, folks. We're going to keep on keeping on. I hope you enjoyed what we had to say tonight. If you've got any questions, feel free, you know, to go to the Facebook page, Contending for Truth Radio, or go to my email address at c4tradio@yahoo.com, and talk to us. Let us know your concern. We're going to come in. We went in on This Is God Country by D-Rock, a great man, great patriot. We're going out on Keep On, Keeping On. This is our theme. This is our theme for Sunday. I mean, for Thursday. Don Miller. We're going to keep on keeping on until Lippy and Bruni and Maddie, until they're gone. And Don Miller is at home. Thanks. And have a nice day.
That just go wrong, make you wanna holler and shout and throw your hands up in the air, wondering what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And you think that things can get much worse in a second. Oh, everything just goes down. Keep on keeping on. Whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. Darkness comes before the dawn. I beg you won't.